Yes,
she said. You got Carmen Greer in here?
Yes.
Can I see her?
No.
Not even for a minute?
Not even.
So when can I?
You family?
I'm a friend.
Not a lawyer, right?
No.
Then Saturday. Visiting is Saturday, 2 to 4.
Almost a week, he thought. Can you write that down for me? He said. He wanted to get inside. Maybe give me a list of what I'm allowed to bring her? The bailiff shrugged and turned and stepped inside. Reacher followed her into the dry chill of an air conditioner running on high. There was a lobby. The bailiff had a high desk, like a lectern, like a barrier. Behind it were cubbyholes covering the back wall. He saw Carmen's lizard skin belt rolled into one of them. There was a small Ziploc bag with the fake ring in it. Off to the right was a barred door, a tiled corridor beyond.
This is the end of Side 1. This program is continued on Side 2 of this cassette.
The bailiff had a high desk, like a lectern, like a barrier. Behind it were cubbyholes covering the back wall. He saw Carmen's lizard skin belt rolled into one of them. There was a small Ziploc bag with the fake ring in it. Off to the right was a barred door, a tiled corridor beyond. How is she? He asked. The bailiff shrugged again.
She ain't happy.
About what?
About the cavity search, mainly. She was screaming fit to burst, but rules are rules.
And what? She thinks I enjoy it either? She pulled a mimeographed sheet from a stack, slid it across the top of the desk.
Saturday, 2 to 4. Like I told you, and don't bring her anything that's not on the list or we won't let you in.
Where's the DA's office? She pointed at the ceiling.
Second floor, go in the front.
When does it open?
About 8:30.
You got bail bondsmen in the neighborhood? She smiled.
Ever see a courthouse that didn't? Turn left at the crossroads.
What about lawyers?
Cheap lawyers or expensive lawyers?
Free lawyers. She smiled again.
Same street, she said. That's all it is, bondsmen and community lawyers.
Sure I can't see her?
Saturday you can see her all you want.
Not now. Not even for a minute.
Not even.
She's got a daughter, Reacher said irrelevantly.
Breaks my heart,
the woman said back. When will you see her?
Every 15 minutes, whether she likes it or not. Suicide watch, although I don't think your friend is the type. You can tell pretty easy. And she's a tough cookie, that's my estimation. But rules are rules, right?
Tell her Reacher was here.
Who?
Reacher. Tell her I'll stick around. The woman nodded, like she had seen it all, which she probably had.
I'm sure she'll be thrilled, she said.
Then Reacher walked back to the motel strip, remembering all the jailhouse duty he had pulled early in his career, wishing he could put his hand on his heart and say he had acted a whole lot better than the woman he had just met. He walked almost all the way back to the highway until the prices ducked under $30, picked a place and woke the night clerk and bought the key to a room near the end of the row. It was worn and faded and crusted with the kind of dirt that shows the staff isn't all the way committed to excellence. The bedding was limp, and the air smelled dank and hot, like they saved power by turning the air conditioning off when the room wasn't rented. But it was serviceable. One advantage of being ex-military was almost any place was serviceable. There was always somewhere worse to compare it with. He slept restlessly until 7 in the morning and showered in tepid water, and went out for breakfast at the donut shop halfway back to the courthouse. It was open early and advertised Texas-sized donuts. They were larger than normal and more expensive. He ate 2 with 3 cups of coffee. Then he went looking for clothes. Since he ended his brief flirtation with owning a house, he had gone back to his preferred system of buying cheap items and junking them instead of laundering them. It worked well for him. It kept the permanence monkey off his back. Literally. He found a cheap store that had already been open an hour. It sold a little bit of everything, from bales of cheap toilet paper to work boots. He found a rack of chinos with the brand labels cut out. Maybe they were flawed. Maybe they were stolen. He found the right size and paired them with a khaki shirt. It was thin and cut loose like something from Hawaii, but it was plain, and it cost less than a Texas-sized donut. He found white underwear. The store had no fitting rooms. It wasn't that kind of a place. He talked the clerk into letting him use the staff bathroom. He put on the new gear and transferred his stuff from pocket to pocket. He still had the 8 shell cases from Carmen's Lorcan rattling around like loose change. He weighed them in his hand and then dropped them in his new pants pocket. He balled up the old clothes and stuffed them in the bathroom trash, went back out to the register and paid $30 in cash. He might get 3 days out of it. $10 a day just for clothes made no sense at all, until you figured a washing machine cost $400 and a dryer another $3, and the basement to put them in implied a house which cost at least $100,000 to buy, and then tens of thousands a year in taxes and maintenance and insurance and associated bullshit. Then $10 a day for clothes suddenly made all the sense in the world. He waited on the sidewalk until 8 o'clock, leaning against a wall under an awning to stay out of the sun. He figured the bailiffs would change shifts at 8. That would be normal. And sure enough, at 5 minutes past, he saw the heavy woman drive herself out of the lot in the dusty 4-cylinder Chevrolet. She made a left and drove right past him. He crossed the street and walked down the side of the courthouse again. If the night shift won't help you, maybe the day shift will. Night workers are always tougher. Less regular contact with the public, less immediate supervision, makes them think they're king of the castle. But the day worker was just as bad. He was a man, a little younger, a little thinner, but otherwise the exact equivalent of his opposite number. The conversation was just the same. Can I see her? No. When then? Saturday. Is she okay? As well as can be expected. It sounded like something you would hear in front of a hospital from a cautious spokesperson. The guy confirmed that only lawyers were allowed unrestricted access to the prisoners. So Reacher came back up the steps and went out looking for a lawyer. It was clear that the events of the previous night had left the Red House stunned and quiet and depopulated, which suited the killing crew just fine. The ranch hands weren't there, the tall stranger was gone, and Carmen Greer was gone. And her husband, obviously. That left just the old woman, the second son, and the granddaughter. 3 of them, all at home. It was Monday, but the kid hadn't gone to school. The bus came and went without her. She just hung around in and out of the barn. She looked confused and listless. They all did, which made them easier to watch. Better targets. The two men were behind a rock opposite the ranch gate, well hidden and elevated about 20 feet up the slope. Their view was good enough. The woman had dropped them 300 yards north and driven back toward Pecos. "When do we do this?" they had asked her.
"When I say," she had replied.
Reacher turned left at the crossroads in the center of Pecos and followed a street that ran parallel with the railroad tracks. He passed the bus depot and hit a strip that might have started out as anything, but now was made up entirely of low-rent operations serving the courthouse population. Bail bondsmen, and storefront legal missions, like the night shift woman had said. The legal missions all had rows of desks facing the store windows, with customer chairs in front of them, and waiting areas inside the doors. All of them were grimy and undecorated and messy, with piles of files everywhere, and notes and memos taped and tacked to the walls next to the desks. 8:20 in the morning, they were all busy. They all had patient knots of people waiting inside, and anxious clients perched on the customer chairs. Some of the clients were on their own, but most of them were in family groups, some of them with a bunch of children. All of them were Hispanic. So were some of the lawyers. But overall, they were a mixed bunch. Men, women, young, old, bright, defeated. The only thing they had in common was they all looked harassed to breaking point. He chose the only establishment that had an empty chair in front of a lawyer. It was halfway down the street, and the chair was way in back of the store, and the lawyer was a young white woman of maybe 25, with thick, dark hair cut short. She had a good tan and was wearing a white sports bra instead of a shirt, and there was a leather jacket slung over the back of her chair. She was nearly hidden behind 2 tall stacks of files. She was on the phone, and she was at the point of tears. He approached her desk and waited for a sit-down gesture. He didn't get one, but he sat down anyway. She glanced at him and glanced away, kept on talking into the phone. She had dark eyes and white teeth. She was talking slow Spanish with an East Coast accent, haltingly enough that he could follow most of it. She was saying, "Yes, we won." Then, "But he won't pay. He simply won't. He just refuses." Time to time, she would stop and listen to whoever was on the other end. Then she would repeat herself, "We won, but he still won't pay." Then she listened again. The question must have been, "So what do we do now?" Because she said, "We go back to court to enforce the judgment." Then the question was obviously, "How long does that take?" Because she went very quiet and said, "A year. Maybe two." Reacher heard clear silence at the other end and watched the woman's face. She was upset and embarrassed and humiliated, blinking back tears of bitter frustration. She said, "Llamaré de nuevo más tarde," and hung up. "I'll call again soon." Then she faced front and closed her eyes and breathed deeply through her nose, in and out, in and out. She rested her hands, palms down on the desk, breathed some more. Maybe it was a relaxation technique they taught you in law school, but it didn't seem to be working. She opened her eyes and dropped a file into a drawer and focused between the piles of paper across the desk at Reacher. "Problem?" he asked her. She shrugged and nodded all at the same time, an all-purpose expression of misery.
"Winning the case is only half the battle," she said. "Sometimes a lot less than half, believe me."
"So what happened?" She shook her head.
"We don't need to go into it."
"Some guy won't pay up?" Reacher said. She shrugged and nodded again.
"A rancher," she said, "crashed his car into my client's truck, injured my client and his wife and two of his children. It was early in the morning. He was on his way back from a party, drunk. They were on their way to market. It was harvest time, and they couldn't work the fields, and they lost their whole crop."
"Cantaloupe?"
"Bell peppers, actually. Rotted on the vine. We sued and won $20,000, but the guy won't pay. He just refuses. He's waiting them out. He plans to starve them back to Mexico. And he will, because if we have to go back to court, it'll take at least another year. And they can't live another whole year on fresh air, can they?"
"They didn't have insurance?"
"Premiums are way too expensive. These people are barely scratching a living. All we could do is proceed directly against the rancher. Solid case, well presented, and we won. But the old guy is sitting tight with a big smirk on his damn face."
"Tough break," Reacher said.
"Unbelievable," she said. "The things these people go through, you just wouldn't believe it. This family I'm telling you about, the border patrol killed their eldest son."
"They did?" She nodded.
12 years ago. They were illegals, paid their life savings to some guy to get them here, and he just abandoned them in the desert. No food, no water. They're holing up in the daytime and walking north at night, and a patrol chases them in the dark with rifles and kills their eldest boy. They bury him and walk on."
"Anything get done about it?"
"Are you kidding? They were illegals. They couldn't do anything. It happened all the time. Everybody's got a story like that. And now they're settled and been through the immigration amnesty. We try to get them to trust the law, and then something like this happens. I feel like such a fool."
"Not your fault."
"It is my fault. I should know better. Trust us," I tell them.
She went quiet, and Reacher watched her try to recover.
"Anyway,"
she said, and then nothing more. She looked away. She was a good-looking woman. It was very hot. There was a single air conditioner stuck in the fanlight over the door, a big old thing, a long way away. It was doing its best.
"Anyway,"
she said again, looked at him.
"How can I help you?"
"Not me," Reacher said. "A woman I know."
"She needs a lawyer?"
"She shot her husband. He was abusing her."
"When?"
"Last night. He's across the street in jail."
"Is he dead?"
Reacher nodded. "As a doornail." Her shoulders sagged. She opened the drawer and took out a yellow pad.
"What's your name?"
she asked.
"My name?" "You're the one talking to me."
"Reacher," he said. What's your name? She wrote Reacher on the pad, first line.
Alice, she said. Alice Amanda Aaron.
You should go into private practice. You'd be first in the yellow pages. She smiled, just a little.